Hi, it's Mountain Edition. All the news from the week here in the Roaring Fork Valley coming at you in the next half hour. I'm Kristen Kay here with Elizabeth Stewart Severy. And Elizabeth, you've been up and at 'em as Morning Edition host this week.
It has been a week of early mornings, but I've got my coffee and I wouldn't miss talking about all the local stories.
I have to admit, I've had a couple of cups too, so we're both ready. We've got stories this week about sexual harassment allegations rocking the Colorado State House, a lawsuit that stopped a controversial predator study in its tracks, for now, and a study on affordable housing for artists in Carbondale.
Also, winter's just around the corner and lots of concerts and events are coming up. Speaking of music, we'll talk to an artist in Carbondale who's using a new approach to help him find stardom.
The news from this week coming up on this very caffeine-fueled edition of Mountain
Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent, and I have to add, frequent guest on Valley Roundup, is joining the Detroit Free Press. He leaves early next month.
Wyatt Orm has this report.
Essex will return to Detroit to serve as the paper's senior content director for business and auto news. He says he's excited to work in a bigger market again.
I guess if there's anything that I have missed journalistically in Glenwood Springs, it's sort of the capital B big story.
Essex was hired as the editor of the Post-Independent in 2014. He took on the additional role of publisher in 2016. He says he's most proud of the reporting the paper has done on housing. Many of Essex's critics say he's too politically liberal.
I think that if you're the editor of a newspaper website, and if you're trying to really generate discussion about the most important issues in a community, and you don't have some critics, that you failed.
December 4th is his last day at the newspaper. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
Now to the Colorado State House. Democratic State Representative Steve Lebsack is being pressured to resign and abandon his campaign for Colorado treasurer amid allegations that he harassed, intimidated, and made unwanted sexual advances toward female lawmakers, staffers, and lobbyists.
The story, which caused an upheaval at the state capitol, was uncovered by our State House reporter, Benta Berkland. She has more.
Last Friday, we broke the story of Democratic Representative Faith Winter accusing Steve Lebsack of sexual misconduct. When we confronted him with the allegations, he initially denied knowing anything. In a subsequent written statement, Lebsack went further, saying he didn't do anything criminal, and any accuser should file a formal complaint. But that wasn't good enough for Kirsten Boyd.
I am hoping that he's not allowed to get away with that kind of behavior. Continuing that kind of behavior, because it doesn't belong anywhere, least of all in public office.
Boyd worked on Lebsack's Democratic campaign for state treasurer, but quit after reading our online story.
If I had known, I would never have taken the contract, because I have the utmost respect for Faith and for the other people that are coming forward.
The incident with Representative Winter happened in 2016 at a bar a few blocks from the state capitol. Everyone from the governor to members of the media were there celebrating the end of the legislative session. Winter was talking to Lebsack, who learned her husband was out of town.
At that time, the conversation took a turn, and he described with various language about different sexual acts we could do to each other. We could make each other happy. He wanted me to leave the bar with him. I told him no. I told him to go home. The more I rebuffed him, the angrier he got, the more agitated he got. He tried to grab my elbow to get me to leave with him. And at that point, I didn't feel safe.
Another Democrat, House Assistant Majority Leader Alec Garnett, responded when Winter signaled to him that Lebsack was harassing her. He says Lebsack shouted a profanity at him for interfering.
It definitely changed their relationship. I think, we're a team, our caucus. We kind of wade through the trenches together, and when there's sort of a break in the chain like that, it can really make people uncomfortable, and I think that's exactly what happened.
Afterwards, Winter told her story to legislative leaders, but never filed a formal complaint, fearing people wouldn't believe her and retaliation from Lebsack. She only came forward after hearing about other incidents when Lebsack was vulgar, aggressive, and intimidating. Others have also followed Winter's lead. Casey Turner is a former legislative aide. She came forward after our initial story and says he once undid a button on her blouse and said, quote, that's better. Former lobbyist Holly Terry has also gone on the record. She worked closely with Lebsack when she was with Colorado Voters for Animals.
Lebsack came into office in 2013 and was a fierce protector of animal protections.
In one instance, she alleges he vulgarly asked her to have sex on the table. When she refuted, he joked about it and then apologized. She says she always stood up to him, but it felt like expected behavior. She recalls another time when they were sitting on a bench outside the Capitol.
My dress came up over my knee when I sat down, and he said, "You look really good. You just need to shave the top part of your legs." And that cut deep. I felt objectified, and I didn't like it.
Over the weekend, Representative Steve Lebsack issued a second written statement in which he apologized, saying he was being playful and doesn't remember being hurtful, and that he was sorry for how he made these women feel. Tanner, Terry, and Winter issued their own joint statement, saying it wasn't enough. Here's Faith Winter.
I appreciated it that he is beginning to take responsibility for his actions, but his entire apology focuses on how he made the three of us feel and not the actions he actually took.
There's been a swift outcry denouncing sexual harassment at the state capitol, including from Governor John Hickenlooper. He said we must ensure that all are respected and the environment where we work is safe. Speaker of the House Chrisanta Duran went farther and called for Lebsack's resignation.
I believe that there should be an extremely high standard of conduct for the legislature, and I take any allegations of sexual assault and harassment very seriously.
Duran has also temporarily removed Lebsack from his chairmanship on the House Local Government Committee. Representative Lebsack has not resigned his seat and says he'll decide by the end of the month his future as a state lawmaker and his bid to become treasurer. I'm Benta Berkland.
Lebsack has responded to the allegations by vowing to fight, telling reporters Tuesday that he has not had the opportunity to confront his accusers.
Right now, I'm being violated. My rights are being violated. And I didn't even have an opportunity to tell my side of the story before the governor, lieutenant governor, and others asked for my resignation.
Lebsack has not definitively said if he will step down.
I have publicly stated that I'll be having a press conference on November 30th where I'll be talking about my future both as a state representative and my candidacy for Colorado State Treasurer.
Republican Representative Lois Landgraf of Fountain is now questioning just what Speaker of the House Chrisanta Duran knew about the allegations. In a letter, Landgraf says Duran put workers at the state capitol in, quote, great risk, and is calling for the state attorney general to investigate how the Winter matter was handled. You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy.
And I'm Kristen Kay. And Elizabeth, obviously, if people are listening to Mountain Edition, they want to stay in the know about local news.
Absolutely. And they can also stay on top of what's happening with Aspen Public Radio and throughout the community by liking our Facebook page.
On our Facebook page, you can interact with our station through comments on our posts and by messaging us directly.
You can also learn about our upcoming town hall, which focuses on affordable housing in the Valley. And the big questions: who gets APCHA housing and why?
Check it out by searching Aspen Public Radio on Facebook.
Speaking of affordable housing, Carbondale wants to offer more of that to artists and is working with the national nonprofit Art Space to do so.
Claire Woodcock reports.
Carbondale is the latest creative district in Colorado to work with Art Space. The national nonprofit, based in Minneapolis, will look at project leadership, funding, and the community's goals at the beginning of December. Wendy Holmes with ArtSpace says one challenge Carbondale faces is finding a place for an affordable housing project. To learn more, the public can attend a meeting December 5th at 7 o'clock p.m. at the 3rd Street Center Gymnasium. Claire Woodcock, Edless Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
The Grand Avenue Bridge is open. The 25,000 or so vehicles that come in and out of Glenwood Springs every day will no longer be rerouted onto Midland Avenue. The $125 million bridge project is winding down, but it's not over. Joining me in the studio to talk about what's left to do is Aspen Public Radio's Wyatt Orm. Hi, Wyatt.
Hi.
Okay, so the bridge is open, but it's not done?
Not done. I recently spoke with Tom Newlin. He works for the Colorado Department of Transportation. He's their public information officer for the bridge project. He says there's still 6 months of construction left. Some major things that need to get done: CDOT and the contractor are going to extend the eastbound on-ramp at exit 116 getting onto I-70. So, you know, when you're headed down Highway 82, you go through Glenwood, you cross the bridge, you're headed towards Denver, and you get on the on-ramp, and then all of a sudden you're like on the highway.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
It's scary. So that's now going to change. They're going to extend that on-ramp by about another 500 feet or so. The parking lot belonging to the Glenwood Hot Springs and Pool, that's been used by construction crews for about 3 years. It's kind of their staging ground for a lot of the construction. The contractor is going to build the hot springs, a new and improved parking lot.
So aside from roads and parking lots, how is the river going to be affected? Are construction crews cleaning up?
Yeah. If you stand on the pedestrian bridge and look down, there are these, they're called causeways. They're these kind of big rock platforms that go into the river. They've been used primarily for heavy machinery to take down the piers on the old bridge, put the new ones up. These need to be taken out by March 1st. That's when trout spawning season starts. So a lot of trucks will be hauling rocks out from the riverbanks. There's a lot of minor stuff that still needs to get done, of course. The rock work on the new piers of the bridge will be finished. The contractor has what's called a punch list, and it's just, you know, a matter of fixing a crack here, taking care of that over there, you know, so on.
So it sounds like there's a lot left to do, but the bridge itself, the bridge we're driving on, that's done.
It's not done. There's actually one thing they still need to do. They need to seal the deck. So the entire deck, what we drive across, is going to get a concrete sealant. It creates this really strong finish. That needs to be applied at warming temperatures, so crews won't do that until May. But they won't close the bridge entirely again. They'll probably just kind of set one lane aside and finish it incrementally.
Okay, that's a relief.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, Wyatt.
You're welcome.
Last month, students from across the Roaring Fork Valley gathered to discuss water, and Elizabeth, you were there.
Yeah, this was the first ever Youth Water Summit. Teenagers from area schools presented their own white papers on everything from water rights to environmental activism.
We're making a change.
It's mid-morning at the 3rd Street Center in Carbondale, and researchers have gathered to discuss pressing water issues. They are young and energetic and passionate about their subject areas.
Because in the riparian habitat, there's like there's vegetation, there's plants, there's animals.
Will Hassel is a 7th grader at Glenwood Springs Middle School, but he's here as an expert on Two Rivers Park in Glenwood, where the Roaring Fork meets the Colorado.
We need to have safer access to the river because a lot of people enjoy like actually going down to the river and swimming in it.
A plan to revitalize the area is in the works, and Hassel and his classmates have ideas about what should happen. They want to protect the riparian habitat and ensure that people can safely play in the water. They were one of 15 student groups who presented at last month's Youth Water Summit. Pitkin County's Healthy Rivers and Streams Board sponsored the event and hired Sarah Johnson of Wild Rose Education to organize it.
We want these kids to have a stronger water ethic and a stronger sense of watershed literacy and river literacy, you might say.
Students from local middle and high schools studied issues related to water management across the West. They learned from water experts and posed their own big questions. What are the effects of the Colorado River running dry? How are art, literature, and film used for water activism?
Watershed issues are not science issues by themselves. They're very interdisciplinary, whole picture, watershed-wide problems and or opportunities.
The kids spent months researching the context and the consequences of their chosen topics, and then presented their findings to classmates.
Rivers are the lifeflow and lifeline to the earth, just like the veins and blood that flow through our bodies.
Fresh water in the whole world is only 2.5% of all this water.
We're trying to grow food technically in the desert.
And often, these findings lead to more questions.
Because it's like, think about it, like, why would you plant plants in the desert when you could plant them in better places?
The audience for this exchange is fellow students, but it also includes policymakers and experts from the Colorado River District, the City of Aspen, the Roaring Fork Conservancy, and Healthy Rivers and Streams. Lisa Tasker is chair of that board.
The idea was for everybody to mingle kind of on an equal basis, and so the kids could interact with water professionals.
Tasker says part of the goal is to encourage students to acknowledge the roles they play in the complex world of water management. For example, the Colorado Rocky Mountain School owns a water right on the Crystal River.
They actually irrigate some fields, some of their property, And so they are part of the diversion system.
The event allowed kids to consider current issues in their own backyards and the bigger picture of water policy across the West. Tasker was particularly impressed with a presentation on the 1922 Colorado River Compact, which governs water rights in seven states across the West.
I mean, they're starting to get into the weeds just like we do a little bit. And good for them, you know, because maybe they can help us get out.
As the day nears completion, kids trudge out of the presentations wide-eyed and a little dazed. But the adults in the room are all smiles.
These kids definitely give me a lot of hope. You know, honestly, me personally, I'm looking for hope.
Tasker and organizer Sarah Johnson hope that this event is just the start for these students. After all, there's no shortage of water issues to discuss in coming years.
Shell is an Americana quartet from Port Collins. The band is now in Nashville, but will be playing the Wheeler Opera House this weekend.
Claire Woodcock spoke with violinist and guitarist Sarah Holbrook. They began by discussing what it's like to be in a band with your sisters.
I imagine there's something so special about being able to create music with your siblings, but I bet that also comes with its own set of challenges.
It was pretty sweet. I mean, we just grew up playing music with our dad, you know, and then it just morphed into something that we all absolutely love to do and just continue to do it. Working with your sisters is a blessing and a curse, you know, but mostly a blessing. I can't imagine touring with anybody else now because we all get along so well and we're like masters of conflict resolution at this point. Because if something blows up and we don't want to do it anymore, we still have to see each other at Christmas.
Shell was known across the Colorado music scene for its folk rock origins, but the sound has evolved since you started working with electronic music producer Dave Stewart. What's that been like for the band?
Working with Dave Stewart was, I mean, such a great experience. First off, he's a rock star and has such a cool perspective on life and on music. The way we made the album with him was we would record here with Brent Mayer, and then we would send tracks over to him in LA, and he would add more tracks to it and send it back, and we would like hone it in together. It was pretty inspiring for sure.
There's a song in particular he really loved that will also be on the TV show Shameless next week.
Yeah, so the first song that we did together was You Could Be My Baby. If you know the song, then play the record backwards now. We sent him the tracks that we'd already done for You Could Be My Baby, and what he sent back was just everything that song needed to be, you know, and we were all super excited about it. You could be my baby, you could be
my baby, see. That was Sarah Holbrook of the sister quartet Shell, which performs at the Wheeler Opera House Saturday at 7:30 p.m. This will conclude the venue's fall performance series, On the Rise. I'm Claire Woodcock at the Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy.
And I'm Kristen Kay. In other local news, Wednesday was the last day for the public to submit comments on alignments for a proposed trail through the Crystal River Valley. The feedback will help officials develop a draft plan that will include a proposed route that could be completed by January.
The city of Aspen called for a 3-month suspension on a management agreement with the Red Brick Center for the Arts.
4 popular trails in Sky Mountain Park are closed for an elk hunt.
And Glenwood Springs Police Department has yet to identify the man who robbed an Alpine Bank in West Glenwood last week.
Those stories and more news are on our website now. Take a listen at aspenpublicradio.org. A dentist in Rifle is providing free care to veterans for the month of November.
Wyatt Orm reports.
According to Dr. Cliff Capelli, there are 7,500 vets in Garfield County and the Roaring Fork Valley. Capelli is one of them. Many have medical care through the VA. However,
dental care is another story.
Capelli says he's seeing vets with all kinds of dental needs. And this is important because more and more studies show how much dental health impacts our overall health.
Diabetes, heart disease, stroke, Alzheimer's, birth weight levels.
30 vets are already signed up for Capelli's services. They get full exams, x-rays, and cleanings. They also get a $250 voucher if more care is needed. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
Gypsy Jazz, Memphis Blues, and Bossa Nova will heat up this winter's JAS Cafe series.
Sounds toasty. The lineup was released this week. Claire Woodcock has the details.
9 headliners will bring R&B, blues, jazz, and more to Aspen for the concert series, which runs through March. From Grammy Award-winning vocalist Dee Dee Bridgewater to up-and-coming 16-year-old jazz pianist Matthew Whitaker, this winter's JAS Cafe series showcases diverse musical styles and performers. Vocalist Nikki Harris kicks off the series with the James Horowitz Trio December 21st and 22nd. All shows will take place either at the Cooking School of Aspen or the Little Nell. Claire Woodcock, Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
Last year, the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission approved an experimental study that involves killing mountain lions and bears in an effort to increase the population of mule deer near Rifle. Wildlife groups have since filed lawsuits at both the state and federal levels. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy is here with an update. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good morning.
So what's the latest?
Well, we've had movement in the federal lawsuit. So several wildlife groups filed a lawsuit against a division of the U.S. Department of Agriculture that's called Wildlife Services. This is the federal agency that CPW contracted with to actually kill the bears and mountain lions in the Piance Basin, which is near Rifle, and also for another similar study in the upper Arkansas Valley. The lawsuit was brought on the grounds that the environmental assessment that Wildlife Services completed was not thorough, that it was rushed in order to start those controversial plans rather quickly. And last week, Wildlife Services agreed to temporarily stop killing animals until officials complete a new environmental assessment. That document will give details about the potential environmental effects of plans like this. Wildlife Services will also stop using M44s, which are spring-loaded devices that release sodium cyanide to kill predators. Critics call these cyanide bombs, and they've been in the news lately after a teenager accidentally triggered one in Idaho and it killed his dog.
Okay, can you remind us what's the background on the plan to kill predators near Rifle?
Yeah, CPW has seen a decline in the mule deer population in that area, and their scientists have a theory that the cause could be bears and mountain lions preying on newborn fawns. So the agency has hired Wildlife Services to kill up to 15 lions and 25 bears every year for 3 years during the spring months when those fawns are most vulnerable.
So how does that ruling impact these plans and the killing of bears and lions near Rifle?
That's not totally clear because that plan is time specific. So CPW has hired Wildlife Services to kill the bears and lions in May and June specifically. So there isn't any killing happening now anyways. The stay on that means that CPW can't continue that work until the new environmental assessment is written. That new assessment could be in before May or June, but that's not totally clear.
So the first year of that study already happened.
Right.
Do you have any details about how that went?
Not a ton of details, but the first year did happen. That's been confirmed. CPW will not release how many animals were killed until the study is complete over those full 3 years. They also haven't yet commented on how the federal lawsuit could impact the rest of that study, and it's not clear if they will comment on that. That's at least in part because there's a pending state lawsuit against CPW regarding these predator control plans in particular.
Okay, thank you, Elizabeth.
You bet.
For our last story today, a little music history might be in order. A lot of superstars have called Aspen home. John Denver, Jimmy Buffett, Mariah Carey.
But the music industry has changed since Rocky Mountain High. Today, there's an explosion of online music streaming platforms.
This allows musicians to build a fan base on their own instead of relying on a production label to do the work for them.
Wyatt Orm spent some time with one hip-hop musician working on worldwide fame from his home in Carbondale, Colorado.
This is Metallic Alex's new single, Aware.
I can see your beauty running deep in your soul. You ain't never got a trip.
And it started, like most of his songs, on an iPad. Metallic Alec is Alec Griffith. He's 20 and from Little Rock, Arkansas. We're sitting on his couch, and he's wearing a fur-lined winter coat. Tattoos creep out from the sleeves. We hover over his iPad and shop online for pre-produced beats. The beat is the musical foundation of the song. Alec has already written some lyrics.
Now, we could take it back 2 years in the past. I would hit the L, take it all to the face.
You can find his music just about anywhere.
iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify, Google Play, Pandora.
And on his iPad, he can see where people are streaming his music all around the world.
If we're taking it to Europe, it looks like it's spreading in London. Somewhere in the middle, I don't even know where this is at.
Oh, it's in Austria.
Yeah. Austria, Vienna.
How many you have in there?
Three.
Three streams.
Hey, but it's a start.
Alec pays a company $50 per song to splash his music across the internet. That's likely how the three Austrian listeners found him. Every time someone presses play, Alec makes 1/100th of a penny.
I just got a $12 check yesterday.
Because hip-hop doesn't pay the bills yet, Alec works the night shift at City Market in El Jebel stocking shelves. And besides covering his living expenses, it all goes into making his album.
So far, I've probably spent maybe $5,000. I'm thinking I'm probably spending about $15,000 total on this album.
Alec moved to Carbondale this past summer to record at Mad Dog Ranch Studios. It's on some secluded property right on Snowmass Creek. Jimmy Buffett used to own the property. It's now a commercial studio. Is Radar. One of the owners, Ralph Pitt, is a veteran sound engineer. He's worked with artists like ZZ Top, Bonnie Raitt,
Taj Mahal, members of the Rolling Stones.
So given his experience, I ask a question I've had all along. Does Metallic Alec have a shot?
He's got as good of a chance as anybody. There's some stuff that's been produced over the years that is absolute poo, and it sells like wildfire. On the other hand, there's stuff that's out there that is amazing, and nobody buys it. Who knows?
Ralph Pitt says one thing Alec has done well is to cultivate a fan base.
His audience, from what he told me, is mostly young girls. His music primarily talks about respecting women. He's got a niche.
Alec spends a lot of time growing what he calls the Talek family.
I like to spend about 5 to 7 hours a day just simply interacting with my fans, just talking to them until they're in bed, which is around midnight.
He has around 20,000 fans on Facebook. His music videos on YouTube all combined have hundreds of thousands of views. In fact, as we sit, he's filming us for his YouTube channel. He's his own promoter.
I do everything myself. It's a DIY situation.
Alec has work ethic and he has passion. And even though he's chosen a path that's far from certain, he's committed. He'll continue to work on his debut album, Lonely But Loyal, mixed and mastered right here in the Roaring Fork Valley. Cause I feel it in Manhattan. I feel it in LA. I feel it out of Aspen. Everywhere I feel the same. Wyatt Orme, Aspen Public Radio News. It's all love. You know I can never get enough.
That's all for Mountain Edition this week. I'm Kristen Kay.
And I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy. You can find more news from the Roaring Fork Valley and national and international news on our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, and this week, Valley Roundup is going live. Valley Roundup takes you behind the headlines with a panel of local reporters and editors, and the conversation will happen in real time. Joining me in the Aspen Public Radio studios this week will be Curtis Wackerly of the Aspen Daily News, Brent Gardner-Smith of Aspen Journalism, and Aspen Public Radio's Statehouse correspondent, Benta Berkland. We'll dig into sexual harassment allegations at the state capitol and other local news stories. And it's live, so who knows what'll happen. Catch Valley Roundup this Friday afternoon at 3:30.